Okay, cool.
So there we go. We'll get that started. How this all came about is Miss Adrian and I have been sitting occasionally as she's doing my hair, and she's often brought up the Old Soul Stroll. And I'm like, you know, that would be a neat thing to do a podcast about. And she goes, yeah, you know, whenever you want to do it, I'll do it. I'm like, okay, but it's just never gelled. And then I'm getting my hair done, and I'm like, hey, you know, I want to get it retouched. What if we do it then? And she's like, yeah. So
I love that.
I sat in the chair and she did my hair, and I interviewed her as she was doing my hair.
That's fabulous.
And she brought up your name, actually, as a collaborator in some of the tours, as well as some of the other paranormal events that have been undertaken within the Boyertown, Pottstown
area. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
And then that's when I reached out to you.
Perfect. Perfect. That's cool.
Hello, and welcome to Canyon Creek. I'm Bill Gannon, and today I'd like to talk about...
Welcome, everybody. I'm Bill Gannon, and I'm here with Katie McVeigh. Katie is a producer, an author, public speaker, and a paranormal event planner. I want to ask you about that one in a second.
Okay.
Most of all, and what I'm really interested in, is Ghost Hunter.
Sure.
Katie, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then, yeah, let's get into what is a paranormal event planner.
Ooh, let's get into that. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on, so thank you. So your question was a little bit about myself. Well, you kind of summed it up. I've lived in this area my whole life. I've been into the paranormal for, 30-some years or so. I didn't really take it seriously until about five years ago. I had my first experience, though, when I was 16 years old. So I think that's what kind of started me on the path of getting into the paranormal. And then from there, it just kind of snowballed. And I watched scary movies, and I was a child of the 80s. So I watched all the scary movies, you know, the Freddy Krueger movies and Poltergeist and all that. So I was heavily influenced by those scary movies. And then at some point, I had another paranormal experience that I couldn't really explain. And that's when I was like, you know what? I should probably start exploring this because I couldn't quite understand what was going on. But I didn't, honestly, Bill, I didn't take it as seriously until my father passed away. And I saw some things that I couldn't explain with him passing. And that's what really started me on the path. And I was thinking, there's got to be something more than life. There's got to be life after death, just because of what I experienced with my father. And that's when I really started to take things seriously.
Okay, we're going to get into this series, but you mentioned being a child of the 80s and some of the things that you were interested in. What's your favorite scary movie?
Oh, my favorite scary movie. It's a really obscure one. Not a lot of people have heard about it. It's called The Changeling with, I can't think of his name. It was from the 80s and it was about, I can't think of his name. He's an older actor and he's since passed away. I'll think of it after this interview is over. I guarantee you that. But it was called The Changeling, and it was a classic haunted house movie. A widower moves into a house, finds out that it's haunted by a ghost spirit of a child that's haunting the house, and he sets out to figure out why this spirit is haunting the house. George C. Scott.
I remember the title, but I don't quite remember the movie.
Okay. It's really obscure. When people ask, what's your favorite movie? People go the other different route, Poltergeist or Freddy Krueger or something like that.
The mainstream.
Mainstream stuff. My pick is a little more obscure. So George C. Scott and The Changeling.
Is that the one that also scared you the most?
Yes.
Okay.
That one scared me a lot because it was the classic jump scares. It wasn't, you know, this was way before CGI. This is way before all the special effects. And this was classic horror and paranormal spiritual stuff. Yeah.
There are two movies, one that really scared the bejesus out of me, and that was the original Salem's Lot.
Oh, yeah.
With David Soul and James Mason. Even though I had to let the dogs out in the backyard, I would not go far from that back door. Dogs could go wherever they wanted. I was right there.
Right.
The other one was a cinematic adaptation of the Peter Straub novel, Ghost Story.
Ghost Story, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That just gave me the willies.
Yeah. I have to go back and watch those. Yeah.
Going back to my first question, what is a paranormal event planner?
A paranormal event planner. So a paranormal event planner is someone who is interested in the paranormal and basically sets up events, more than likely ghost hunts. So I'll find a haunted location. I'll contract with them to run a public event there. I'll sell tickets, and then people will come, and then they'll investigate that location for ghosts, spirits, whatever. So
I did a little bit of research before we got together, and I saw you were in Altoona at the Baker Hotel?
Yeah,
Baker Mansion.
Baker Mansion. That's it.
Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Well, that's one of my new favorite locations. I went out there on a whim 2 summers ago with a friend for a day trip, and we just kind of was tooling around Altoona. I was already an event planner at that point, and we were just kind of tooling around town. We went to see an Altoona Curve baseball game, and I said, hey, do you mind if we pop into Baker Mansion? I want to check it out. I heard it's haunted. So we took the tour, and I didn't even need to say a word. I usually don't say who I am. I usually just take the tour, and if the ghost thing comes up, it comes up. And it did in the tour, it came up. And so spoke with them for a couple of months, and I said, hey, would you be open to the idea of a ghost hunt? They had never had anything publicly before. And there was one reason in particular I was interested in this venue, and that was because it was the inspiration for the CBS hit show Ghosts. If you're familiar with that show on TV, the comedy. The executive producer and writer for that show was born and raised in Altoona, Pennsylvania. And so when he was contracted to write Ghosts and to produce Ghosts, he really wanted to use his hometown of Altoona as inspiration. So a lot of the ghosts in that series and the characters' names themselves are inspired by Baker Mansion and some of the people who lived in Baker Mansion.
Really?
Yeah. So I was heavily inspired by that. So I really wanted to investigate that place.
Part of your bio says that you're a producer of Stream Beacon TV?
Yes.
What is that?
So Beacon TV was a streaming service. I call it the paranormal Netflix. That's what I refer to it as. And it's a streaming service that has programming for horror, true crime, and supernatural stuff, and paranormal. And it was started by Shane Pittman and Joshua Purvis. Shane Pittman, you may know from, he was on a bunch of the TV shows. He was on the Holzer Files, and he was most recently on a show called 28 Days Haunted, and which was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the shows that people are familiar with on TV kind of went away. There was a lot of merging that happened in the industry between Travel Channel, Discovery Channel, and a lot of the TV shows, paranormal shows that people knew went bye-bye. And so Shane, who had already had a lot of influence in the field and a lot of contacts, decided to kind of fill that gap. Mm-hmm. Fill that hole that people were missing. And he started this streaming service called Beacon TV. And so I was already friends with him at this point. And so I approached him and said, hey, you know, what can I do to help? And that was 2 or 3 years ago. And I've been helping them since, helping them create shows and produce shows and going on the road and helping manage their projects.
You're also a CEO and creator of Tamerlane Media. How does that meld in with Beacon TV?
Well, Tamerlane actually came before. I started that about 2 years ago so that I can run my event planning. So I said, okay, I want to be an event planner. How can I do that? So I was like, let me start my own business and I'll run all that through Tamerlane Media. In partnering with that, there was a 3-pronged business plan. It was, I'm going to run events, paranormal events. I'm going to do Reiki and energy healing. I'm an energy healer and a Reiki practitioner. And I love tarot reading. So I'm a self-taught tarot card reader. So I was going to do those three. So I do those three things through Tamerlane. And then when I got involved with Beacon, Tamerlane Media is considered like a producer for Beacon. So everything I do for Beacon TV goes through my business as well.
Do you prefer the term sensitive or intuitive?
I don't prefer one, to be honest. Yeah, either one works for me. I don't know if some people are more sensitive mm-hmm. to that, the distinction. I don't, you know, some people say empath too. Empath, intuitive, sensitive. I use them all interchangeably.
You had mentioned one of the things that really made you take another look at the paranormal was an event around your father. Mm-hmm. If you would like to go into some detail about that, great.
Sure.
If not, I understand. Mm-hmm. Let me relay an experience I had, if
Please.
It makes you yeah. feel comfortable. I was about 10 years old when my oldest brother passed away. Mm. This was back around 79, I guess it was. I had a very difficult time dealing with it.
Sure.
I guess in order for me to understand and to be able to accept it, he decided to stop by.
Oh.
In a dream, or what felt really real, he was initially, my bedroom was on the third floor of our parents' house, and he was initially down at the bottom of the steps.
Okay.
I'm in bed. Then next thing I'm aware of, he's at the foot of my bed, and he's in the tuxedo that he was buried in. And he just looked at me and said, everything's going to be fine. And wow, I'm actually getting a little. And I remember part of that scenario is after he left, because he basically dissipated. He just evaporated.
Okay.
I remember calling down to my parents because they were, as far as my bedroom went, they were like just off to the right of my bedroom. They either didn't hear or ignored me. I'm like, okay, so that was interesting.
Yeah.
So for me, that made me second guess my, what's the word I'm looking for? My belief system on the afterlife and what's involved. Do I believe in like a heaven and hell? I really don't know.
Okay.
I think I like to prefer that it's what we make it here is what we, what comes after.
Okay.
I hope that by that visit, I have lived up to whatever expectations that he may have had, doing the right thing by him.
Right. Now, how old were you when that happened?
I was about 10, maybe 11 when the visitation happened.
Wow. And it was once and done? You never visited again?
Never saw him again.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's funny, we have a portrait of him in our family room.
Yeah.
And it gives my oldest son the willies because it's got the eyes that seem to follow you everywhere.
Oh, okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, that's a nice story. I'm sure that brought you a lot of comfort.
It did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Did. That's cool.
Tarot reader, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Self-taught tarot reader. Some people have Taco Tuesdays, you have Tarot Tuesdays?
I have Tarot Tuesday. Yeah. I like the sound of it. So.
And this can be found where?
So this is on my Tamerlane Media Facebook page. I try to do it every Tuesday, but because I'm intuitive, I kind of do it when I'm led and guided to do it. It always is a Tuesday, but it's not always every Tuesday. It could be whenever I feel led and guided to do it. But anyone who's interested can go on my Facebook page and watch them.
Is there a way that they can contact you for maybe a one-on-one, or is it?
Yeah, sure. They can reach out to me. They can message me on Facebook. I can give them my email address and my phone number from there. And they can schedule a private reading. Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
What's the most compelling evidence that you've found or personally captured during an investigation?
You know, I get this question a lot, Bill. And the funny thing is that when I talk to people, they always say, Katie, I had the craziest thing happen. And they tell me the craziest stories of things that happened. And I don't have a lot of crazy stories like that. I just
no
don't.
No chairs sliding across.
No, I don't. I guess I'm not a ghost magnet. I don't know. So I had two really profound experiences. One that happened about 3 years ago and one that happened a year ago that I can tell you. I find that I'm not one of those people that has a lot of experiences. I feel things when I go in and I can feel energy and I can feel things, living people and, you know, spirits, but I'm not one of those that has crazy things. Like you said, chairs sliding. But about 3 years ago, I was at an old abandoned school in Ohio and I can't remember the name of it. And it was the very first time that I saw a full body shadow apparition out of the corner of my eye. And I didn't know at the time that that was a common experience. I was in the auditorium of the school. I was up on the stage and I was standing there talking to somebody like you and I are talking. And out of the corner of my eye, I just saw this shadow figure and it was fully formed and it looked like a male and it was see-through, but it was black. And I just saw it just cross off of my periphery. Mm-hmm. And when the person stopped talking, they were facing me so they couldn't see it, but there was somebody standing next to me. And so I turned to that person and she looked at me and she said, I saw it too. And the person who was facing us said, what did you see? I said, I saw a full body apparition, black shadow mass. So they said, that's one of the claims in this gymnasium. And I had no, I didn't know that. I try to go into places somewhat blind, not really knowing. So that was interesting. I'd never seen anything like that.
Was there a history around that school to begin with?
I think there was. I think the janitor had passed, one of the janitors had passed away. I'm not quite certain, but I think the story was one of the janitors had passed away at the school, and that was the shadow figure that a lot of people were seeing.
Have you ever gotten scared during an investigation? If you were, what was it that really frightened you the most? Was it like the feeling of a presence? Mm-hmm. Was it seeing an actual apparition as you just described,
right?
Or temperature changes?
No, I don't scare easily. I'm not one of those that, you know, jumps and is like, oh, you know, I'm mm-hmm. pretty calm and collected, and it takes a lot to scare me, but I do get freaked out. And I do make the distinction between being scared, like having the bejesus scared out of you, versus being, what's the word I'm looking for? Stumped, you know, and like more shocked. Mm-hmm. There was this one place I was at, my second story, and I'll tell you real quick. I was at a jail down in Cochran, Georgia. It's called the Old Bleckley County Jail down in Cochran, Georgia. And a friend of mine owns this jail, and he invited me down there this time last year. And we went down to investigate. And this place is chock full of spirits. Every spirit imaginable. And jails tend to be a little scarier than other, you know, typical mansion. But this place was interesting because there's kind of a portal that surrounds it. So there's a lot of spirits that kind of come in and out of this place. And I was freaked out by this place because we were downstairs. There was two groups of us. There was a group downstairs mm-hmm. and there was a group upstairs investigating. We were downstairs just kind of chilling out, taking a breather, taking a break. The group upstairs was investigating in this portal room, and they were asking questions like, can you see us? What do we look like to you? You know, how thin is the veil? If you can see us, you know, that kind of thing. And we were downstairs. We couldn't hear them because there was a floor that separated us. We were downstairs in the first level, sitting on this couch talking, and we were talking about this, having a random conversation, not even related to the paranormal. And a friend of mine said, hey, I was recently at this place called Capricorn Records in Macon, Georgia. It's really cool. It's apparently haunted, blah, blah, blah. And I would love to check that out sometime. It's called Capricorn Records. And so I was sitting there, and then all of a sudden, I just, for whatever reason, I felt compelled to go upstairs to see how the group upstairs was doing in their investigation. So I walked up the two flights of stairs. I walked into the room, and there was a girl who was under something called an Estes method. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but basically you wear headphones, you have a spirit box, and voices come through, and you can hear the voices come mm-hmm. through, and then she's supposed to announce whatever she hears. So I walk into the room and I turn and I said, how's it going up here? You know, whispering. And all of a sudden the girl had the headphones on. She couldn't hear anyone and she had the blindfold. And all of a sudden she said, Capricorn. And it freaked me out and nobody understood why. And so I freaked out and everyone said, what's the matter? And I said, we were just downstairs talking about Capricorn Records. And the people in the room were like, well, that's just funny. We just said, hey, if you can see us in the jail, if you can see us and hear us, give us a sign. And then the spirit said Capricorn. So that was like, even though I didn't see anything, mm-hmm. I didn't feel anything, I didn't smell anything, that still was probably the most profound experience I've ever had.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What's been the most disappointing? Like, you've heard all this hoopla about a particular site, yeah. and you go there expecting to see the room from Poltergeist, but
right.
you know.
That's a two-part answer. So the first answer is that, and a lot of ghost hunters who may be listening to this, paranormal this, may be a little upset by my answer, but my answer is that I'm a little worn out on some of the bigger places that you hear of. You know, you always hear of like Waverly Hills, Pennhurst, Ohio State, Reformatory, some of the bigger penitentiaries. These are big ticket locations mm-hmm. that everyone's heard of. The Conjuring House, which is under some scrutiny right now.
Yep.
These are some big name places that people go to and love to go to. And I'm a little weary of these places just because they've been done to death. Mm-hmm. So there's two part disappointment. My first disappointment is that we need to find new places, and we need to, not that these places aren't great. They're phenomenal. There's a reason why they're on everyone's radar and they're on everyone's bucket list. And I get that, but I'm a little disappointed that we need to expand our horizons a little bit and try to go out and find new places. Cause there are a lot of places out there that are, you know, historical, that need to be saved, that deserve more attention and need to be on our radar. That being said, one of my biggest disappointments probably was at one of those big locations, and I forget the name of it. It's in West Virginia somewhere, and I forget the name of it. Of course, I'll remember as we're talking.
Okay.
But it's one of those big name locations, and it's on everybody's bucket list. And I went there, and I didn't have anything happen. But that happens all the time. You don't. Sometimes you go, and you have all kinds of stuff, you know, stuff popping off all the time. But sometimes you go, and you have no activity at all. So there was a little bit of disappointment because it is a hyped up place, and I was expecting all kinds of activity, and there was like nothing.
You mentioned bucket list. What is on yours?
Oh gosh. Everyone says the White House.
Really?
Yeah. You ask any paranormal investigator.
You better get down there soon. They're ripping it apart.
I know. It's like a bucket list thing that'll like never happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those.
Is there a room in it, or is it encompassing the whole White House?
I think it's the whole White House. And I think what interests people the most is that there were some presidents in place that were open, you know, to the paranormal that may have stirred up some things, like Abraham Lincoln, you know, with this passing.
Mary Todd.
And I watched a documentary once called Devil in the White House. That was excellent, an excellent documentary. They talked, I forget what president that was. And he had the same, it's very similar experience where he had a son pass away and the wife was trying to open up, you know, communication in the White House with the deceased son. So that's a bucket list, but that'll probably never happen.
How about an achievable?
An achievable one. I want to go overseas somewhere. I would like to investigate like the pyramids of Egypt or something. Like I want to do something not in America. I want to do something older and ancient because, you know, in America, you know, we have a lot of history, you know, but our history is 300 years old, you know, 400 years
Unless
old.
Unless you're on an ancient Indian burial ground.
Exactly. I want to explore things that are a little more ancient, you know, so I want to go over to the pyramids of Giza or something really kind of exotic like that and talk to really old, ancient energy and see what that would feel like.
So I was listening to a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Creeps and Crimes. And they were talking about a castle in Scotland. I think it's referred to as the Leap Castle.
That's in Ireland. Leap Castle. Yes, I've been there.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I have. Yeah. That place is no joke.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very active. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I said at the top of the show, I got to you from Adrienne. Mm-hmm. How long have you known Adrienne and worked with her?
I've known Adrienne. It's one of those friendships where I feel like we've known each other forever, but it's only been maybe 4 or 5 years. I met her back in the day when I was first starting out as a paranormal investigator. And the idea of starting an event planning company was just barely a germ of, you know, information in my head. And I started out actually out on the speaking circuit, and I was going to local haunted places, giving lectures and speeches about, you know, the paranormal and ghost hunting 101 type stuff. And I was just starting out, and Adrienne came to one of those and we met, and she was showing me pictures and we were swapping stories, and it was nice to meet another ghost hunter. And so we just kind of hooked up from there, and we've been friends ever since, and we help each other out, and I help out with her stroll, and I've been to almost all of her strolls now because they're fabulous. And she comes and she helps me out at my events, and she always comes and sets up her equipment and helps me run my events for me.
Neat.
Yeah.
I want to get into some of the methodology and some of the tools of the trade that you guys use in your investigations.
Yeah.
And you mentioned one earlier, using the Estes method of the spirit box and the headphones.
Yeah.
My knowledge of instruments used in investigations is that brought to me by TAPS, the, you know, ghost hunters, and Zach.
Okay, gotcha.
And the stick figure using the SLRS camera. I think Adrienne says she actually has one of those.
Yes.
Do you have all this equipment, and do you find yourself using it all, or is there one specific go-to tool that you prefer?
Well, I, again, two-part answer with that. I went through a period where I felt like I had to have all the equipment, and I had to have all the gear, and I had to have all the gadgets because everybody else did. And I didn't want to show up to a ghost hunt empty-handed. So I started to go out and I started to buy some cheapy stuff. You know, like I bought an EMF detector. I bought a basic voice recorder. I bought cat balls, which you can buy for $1 on Amazon. So I bought some of the cheaper stuff. And then as the years went by, I bought a REM pod, which was like a big splurge for me, you know, but I never really progressed to anything past that. Like, I don't have an SLS camera. I don't have any of the fancy gadgets. I'm not good with technology at all. So I have the basic stuff. And most of the time, I don't even bring it or use it or need it, because when I show up, everyone else has all the gear. I choose to use the best instrument that any person can have and use as their own body. So if someone asks me, what's your favorite piece of equipment? Me. I am my own favorite piece of equipment, because I can hear things, feel things, sometimes smell things, and I can pick up on, you know, I'm like a, every person has the ability to be a spirit antenna. And so that's my favorite piece of equipment is my own five senses.
What's the way to discount for anomalies when using pieces of equipment such as an EMF, the SLRS, the REM pod, even temperature gauges that I've seen? How do you determine what is actual versus just a temperature fluctuation because of maybe a crack in the window?
Yeah, sometimes it is as simple as that. Sometimes it's just your environment. Sometimes it's the house. You really have to know your environment. Sometimes, a lot of times, the good investigators will go in before they set up any gear. They'll just sit in that space for a good 10, 15 minutes to just kind of get the feel and the vibe of a place, to listen to the creaks and the cracks and the house settling. Is there a window open somewhere? How often does the HVAC system come on? Are there any animals on the property or inside the property? That kind of stuff. Do they have a leaky faucet somewhere? So sometimes it's just kind of getting attuned to your environment. And a lot of times when you do that, you can just discount sometimes 50% or more, probably more, of what you pick up.
When you begin an investigation, what are your initial steps?
The initial steps are, well, it depends on if there's somebody present that is like the homeowner or the property manager. We'll talk to them first. And we'll get a sense of their feel and their vibe, depending on if there's any sensitive psychics, empaths, mediums there. They may want to just kind of leave the room at that point because we want to get a brief history. Maybe they'll walk us around to some of the hot spots and kind of show us where they think we should set up shop. And then in my experience, what we'll do then is we'll set up gear and we'll come up with a game plan of how we're going to do things. And we'll set up the gear, but we won't turn it on. And like I said previously, we'll just kind of sit in the space quiet for a few minutes just to kind of get a feel. We may do a walkthrough of the property with no equipment, just silence, just a flashlight, just to sense what's going on in each room to see, okay, this room feels different. Let's set up shop here, that kind of thing. And then from there, we would probably, if it's a small team, we'll stick together. If it's a big team, we'll split up. And we'll go in different areas of the room, accounting for noise contamination. We want to make sure we're not in the next room, you know, from each other, because there might be some noise contamination that happens with that. And then we'll just kind of, I'm more of an intuitive ghost hunter. So I'll go in and I'll go through the initial steps that you asked me about. But then I just kind of allow the night to flow, you know, and just I'll be like, okay, how's everybody feeling? And just kind of take the temperature of everybody. How you feeling? Should we go over here? Do we need a break? You know, that kind of thing.
Do you use night vision cameras and laser arrays to help monitor movements? With the ghost adventures, everything always seems to happen. No matter how many cameras they have, everything's always just off camera.
Yeah.
Once in a while, you might see a fuzzy thing or what they call an orb that floats by. I'm sorry, but I'm a little skeptical of that part, because I have to think, and maybe he's honest to God, true to his word, but I have to think if those guys were actually faced with some of this stuff that they're claiming to have seen, I think they probably would have hung up their spurs by now.
And, right.
Because it's every 5 seconds. Adrian and I have talked about this. There's a high production value to these shows.
Yes.
How do you differentiate between legitimate paranormal investigations and these made-for-TV events?
Right. Well, I can only say with the productions that I've been involved in, yes, we're filming. Yes, there's a high production value, but the production value for us is on the aesthetic and the look and the feel. When it comes to the investigation part of it, we try to be as legit as possible. So we try to accommodate for the different space and everything we talked about, noise contamination, other people in the room, you know, and it's legit. What happens on camera with an investigation is what happens. So the high production value as far as the projects I'm involved in has less to do with the actual investigation and more to do with the look and the feel of the show itself. Are some of the shows faked? Absolutely, because people want, they want to be scared. They want to have those jump scares. So I do believe that some of them are, if not faked, embellished. And I use air quotes when I say that, embellished, to give people what they think they want. But there are a few I feel that are pretty legit.
Have you gone into a space and felt that type of either pull or push from the environment to say, okay, this is not a great place to be. I need to, I need to step away. Or this is an interesting, intriguing place and it's allowing me to go forward.
Right. Yes and yes. So the Conjuring House, I actually have investigated there. And I will say that is one place that for me lived up to the hype in a different way. The house itself, this is weird. This is just my personal opinion. But the house itself was welcoming. But as far as I'm concerned, it's the land with that Conjuring House. It's not so much the house, it's the land that that house sits on. Has some weird juju mojo going on there.
If I remember correctly from, I didn't read it, but I listened to the demonologist.
Okay.
And that's a lot of the investigations that Ed and Lorraine did. And that was one of the ones that they did. And I believe they said it was, there were some rituals on the land that were done that I can definitely see the land absorbing that, that type of energy and not letting go the way you would think it would.
Yeah. Yeah. That place is very, very interesting. Yeah.
Have you been to the Warren's house to see their collection? I know some of it's been on the road, and unfortunately you had the one investigator who coincidentally happened to have passed away while traveling with Annabelle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of rumors and he said, she said around Dan Rivera was his name with Annabelle. And if you listen to the coroner, and why shouldn't you believe the coroner who said that he died of natural causes from a heart condition. So as far as we're concerned, we can just kind of say, okay, Annabelle wasn't to blame for that. And I think that that was just kind of a whirlwind because at the time that that happened, I believe, was it Matt Rife, the comedian who bought the house and all of its belongings and the collections and all that. So there was all of this stuff going on at the same time when Dan Rivera passed. And so I think because of that, had Dan Rivera's passing been an isolated incident, we maybe having a different conversation. But because of the Matt Rife purchase of that house and all the belongings and all that stuff surrounding the Warrens, I think that's why we really kind of grabbed onto that story and wanted to blame Annabelle and blame Annabelle. And I really think that that's me personally. I think that might be coincidence, but yeah.
For some of our listeners, and I know we have at least three, Annabelle is actually a Raggedy Ann or Andy? Ann. Raggedy Ann doll. Not the porcelain doll that they show in the movies.
Right.
So that's just for fear factor.
Yes.
Who's afraid of a Raggedy Ann doll?
I know.
A lot of people, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
We've watched The Ghost Hunters. We've watched Ghost Adventures. We've watched the Midwest Ghost Hunters and some of these other shows.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to think that if there was actual activity in this one spot that Zach Bagans is feeling so much that the TAPS crew or some other crew that's nearby would say, hey, let's go check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the top like 10 that you were talking about earlier, I don't see much overlap in those, I'm guessing, territories. And maybe it's done like professional wrestling was back in the 60s and 70s. Everybody had their territory and they stuck with it.
Right. Yeah.
Is that sort of what you encounter, or do you want people to come in and, hey, check, back us up, like take a look at what we found, see if you experienced the same thing?
Yeah.
And has anybody asked you guys to come in and say, hey, can you double check our work and make sure we're not?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think any really good, reputable paranormal investigator will want backup from another team. I don't think there's enough collaboration in this mm-hmm. field at all. You're right. We'll go to these bucket list items. We'll go to Trans-Allegheny. We'll go to Pennhurst. We'll have our experiences. We'll document them. Maybe we'll post them online for people to watch. Sometimes maybe we won't. But there's no real follow-up to say, hey, you know, this group was just in there and we're about ready to investigate. Let me call them up or reach out to them to see, you know, what we can anticipate or blah, blah, blah. So I think there needs to be a lot more collaboration there. Mm-hmm. I think that'll help further the field. And you're right. I feel that we're kind of siloed as an industry. You know, we have these little pods of people that kind of do their own mm-hmm. thing. And that could just be because of logistics, you know, just because of everybody, where everybody's located. Zach, for example, he's out on the West Coast in Vegas. So mm-hmm. he doesn't travel, you know, east much. He does, his territory is, you know, mostly out west. But the one thing I will say, I may be the only person in the world who defends Zach when I say that the places that he goes to are new and they're different, which is kind of what I'm trying to do.
A lot of the old west, you know, towns that I've seen recently in some of his episodes, yes. I haven't seen.
People right, have yeah. not been there, like the Poltergeist House. You know, he went to the Poltergeist House. Nobody had been there before. You know, now he did go to Virginia City, Nevada way back in the day. And now that's become a staple. And that's like a bucket list item for a lot of people now, Virginia City, Nevada. And he was back there back in the day. So I will defend Zach in one part by saying, you know, he does try to innovate with some of the places that he goes to. He tries to open mm-hmm. up new places, you know, for a paranormal investigation.
You had mentioned the Poltergeist House. Poltergeist is sort of based off of 3 or 4 different stories. Mm. And they were all done by the Warrens. Well, most of them were mm-hmm. investigated by the Warrens, but they just culminated into that movie. Where exactly is that original Poltergeist House?
It is out west somewhere. I forget the state that it's in. I want to say California, maybe? Mm-hmm. And that is actually where they filmed the original. I don't know if they filmed the second one or there was a third Poltergeist too, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think the first and the second one did the best. But that's where they actually filmed, I believe, mm-hmm. the original Poltergeist movie. And I guess the reason why Zach wanted to go is, I guess, because there is some kind of history of, you know, paranormal activity that maybe was pre-existing when mm-hmm. the movie came in and set up shop to film the movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think, I want to say it's in California. So it is out west somewhere.
It's interesting. You can almost overlap The Conjuring and the Poltergeist movie.
Yes.
And they're so similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, I had all these questions. I'm trying to keep track of where I am, but I'm like, wait a minute, this has just led me down that rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah, we're going down a lot of rabbit holes.
No, this is great.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
I guess going down to ethics and responsibility and safety. Mm-hmm. How do you ensure that when you go to a location that you're treating it and any potential mm-hmm. entities with the respect mm-hmm. that maybe the deceased need?
Okay. Well, it depends on every, you know, individual person. If I'm holding an event and I have, say, 20 or 25 people come to the space, I'll usually say something up front right when we're about ready to investigate. I actually, you know, say something out loud to the house and the spirits. Thank you for allowing us to join, you know, become here and to investigate. And we hope that you communicate. We come with love and respect and all that good stuff. So I usually say something out loud when I'm holding an event. If it's a place, if it's an event that I'm going to as a guest, mm-hmm. if somebody else's event, I'll say something silently to myself. And I'll just say, you know, thank you for same thing. Thank you for being here. And, you know, thank you for allowing us to be here and coming together. And we come with respect and all that. And I think that's just standard practice. That's an SOP, you know, that's a standard operating procedure for most, you know, reputable ghost hunters to do that.
Is it disrespectful or dangerous to actually provoke spirits?
To provoke.
To get a reaction, just anything?
Well, you know.
Just knock 3 times if you're here?
Yeah. My opinion of that has softened lately because by default, I don't provoke. I don't try to anger anyone just to try to get a response. In fact, I find the exact opposite works the best because spirits we're human just like we are. And how would you like to be peppered with a million questions? What's your favorite color? You know what I mean? Like, I would be like, okay, enough already. You know what I mean? So I find that doing nothing actually gets you more response. When I'm sitting in a haunted location, or what is reportedly a haunted location, And we're just minding our own business, talking amongst ourselves. But we have equipment going and a recorder going or equipment set up. And we're just talking. We're talking, oh, what'd you have for dinner last night? Oh, how about those Phillies? You know, and we're just kind of bullcrapping with each other is when stuff happens. When you don't pay attention to them, I find is sometimes when you get the most activity.
The annoying cat paradox.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But I, by default, don't provoke. However, my one caveat to that is that some spirits who were maybe ornery in real life mm-hmm. or had a more aggressive, you know, personality in real life, they may expect that. You know, they if you were a more aggressive person, had a more aggressive type A personality in real life, and now you're a spirit mm-hmm. haunting your house, you may not respect me as an investigator if I'm like, hi, how you doing? But if I give you a little bit of grief and if I, you know, poke the bear a little bit, you might like that a little bit more. So there's kind of a two-part answer there. By default, I don't, but mm-hmm. I'll kind of feel the energy around the spirit and be like, okay, this guy was kind of a jerk in real life. So he might like it better if I'm kind of a jerk to him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it kind of depends.
Is there ever a concern that by going into a certain structure or a certain environment that you're stirring something up that maybe shouldn't be stirred up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually just had that experience. Yes, the answer to that is yes. There's always a fear, especially that's a particular fear of mine, because like I mentioned earlier, I try to find places that have not been investigated before. You know, like the Trians, Alleghenies, the Pennhurst, those spirits in that location, they're used to humans being there. They kind of know the deal. But when you go to newer locations like Baker Mansion, that has never been investigated before. Mm-hmm. I was just down in Alabama last week filming at some locations that have never been investigated before. And so the fear is always, oh gosh, these places have never been investigated before. The spirits are just used to doing their own thing. And now here we are setting up shop, you know, trying to provoke, you know, gently provoke them to communicate. What are we unleashing here? Mm-hmm. Is there something here that's going to happen? Are these good spirits or bad spirits? Are you a good witch or a bad witch? Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, they're always that's an inherent fear of mine in particular, because I'm always trying to find new locations that have never been investigated. So I always have this fear, oh gosh, if I go into Trans-Allegheny, I kind of know what I'm getting. I kind of know the stories and the history mm-hmm. and the haunts that are there. I go to a Baker Mansion, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen. So there's always that inherent fear for me. And also as an event planner for the people that I'm actively inviting into these locations, what am I setting them up for too? Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gone to a location and where you've been told you really shouldn't go?
By other people?
Well, yeah. Or... So you have this location, but somebody who may know the history of that mm-hmm. That house, that structure, is like, no, you don't want to go in there. That is not a great place to go.
Or do you... I haven't been told that, but I have said that to other people.
Okay.
I find this may sound a little weird and twisted, but I find most places are fair game for mm-hmm. for investigators, for ghost hunters. They'll go anywhere. They'll investigate anything, no matter how nasty it seems, no matter what the reputation, no matter how dark or twisted mm-hmm. The energy may be there, they'll want to go investigate. What I find, it's usually the psychics, the mediums, the sensitives, the ones who are more open, who may be more, I call them sticky, that are the ones who are going to warn you, hey, if you're a psychic or a medium or sensitive or an intuitive, you may not want to go there. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have something happen or something may attach or go home with you or that kind of thing. I haven't had anyone tell me about a location, but there are, there's one location that I won't name it, but there's one location that people absolutely love. And I'm like, I don't get it. There's two places. I recant that. There's two places that I have been to that I won't go back. I won't go back because the energy there for me personally was so bad. Mm-hmm. That it took me 2 to 3 weeks to recover from investigating there. Then I'm like, I won't go back.
Do you think things can follow you back?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've had that happen to me twice.
How do you cleanse yourself from that attachment?
Well, back in the day, before I was a Reiki practitioner, I didn't really know how to. I didn't know what that was. I didn't. And so I would go to these places and just be like, yeah, I'm having fun, ghost hunting, blah, blah, blah. I would go home and go on my merry little way. And then I would have that paranormal hangover that you talk about. And I would just feel drained and tired and just not myself for a week or two. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? And I didn't recognize what was going on. And then as I became an energy healer, I started to recognize things, and then I started doing practices. So
is that why you became an energy healer?
Yes. Okay. That is definitely why. That was, well, yeah. Yes and no. Yeah. I recognized that I was going to be doing this long term. Mm-hmm. I was like, I need to protect myself. So I want to have some tricks and tools, and I want to protect myself. So I went the Reiki route and I did that. So that's one way that I protect myself. But another way I protect myself, because sometimes it's not enough. Sometimes I find cleansing yourself, you know, people use sage and Palo Santo and the bright white light around you and all that good stuff. That's great. Sometimes it doesn't always work. So I have a good friend of mine who's a shaman in the area. And so when I've been to a place for an extended period of time, or if I've been to a particularly nasty place, I'll go to him and he'll help cleanse me of whatever came home with me or stuck to me or whatever.
Do you have any type of charm that you carry with you? You always see, okay, let's just put the cross up because the cross always works.
Yeah.
I'm going to hazard a guess and say ghosts aren't really denominational.
Mm-hmm.
So what might work for one probably isn't going to work for the next one.
Right.
But do you find that there are certain charms, like the proverbial lucky rabbit's foot,
right,
that might help ward off and protect people?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes down to intention, really. I mean, you could wear, you know, the bracelets, you could wear the charms, necklaces, rabbit's foot, you know, four leaf clover. You can do all of that, or you can do none of that. Because at the end of the day, I think it comes down to intention. If you have a rabbit's foot in your pocket, but you go in there with a bad attitude, rabbit's foot's not going to help you much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's all about the two part thing. It always comes down to intention first. And then how do you want to supplement that and that intention? For me, I always wear like charms and bracelets. And I wear like black, like tourmaline or I forget the names of the other one. Tourmaline's a big one that I wear for protection. And I always usually wear a St. Michael's medal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not religious, but I am spiritual. And so anytime I know I'm going on a ghost hunt or going to some haunted location, that St. Michael's medal goes with me everywhere I go.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you do if you were to encounter a spirit that you do believe has some ill intent?
Well, I can dance around that answer, because I think if I were to go down the rabbit hole, we would talk about, you know, demons, you know, that kind of very dark, low vibrational stuff, which I don't know if I necessarily believe in. We talked, I think, at the very beginning of the conversation, I think that you had said something about, I don't know if I believe in heaven and hell.
You said
something like that. So that kind of touches on that. I don't know if I necessarily believe in truly dark, negative stuff. I believe it's out there, but this may sound weird, but I feel like if there is a lot of dark, negative, like demonic type stuff, it's not human.
Mm-hmm.
I think most humans, if they are nasty, that just means that they were a bad person in real life and they're a bad person in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you should protect yourself from even the nicest. You could go into a haunted location where it's haunted by a nice little grandma.
Mm-hmm.
You still need to protect yourself from her, you know, regardless if it's nice or negative. So I think it all comes down to protection and belief too. You know, if you believe that there's, you know, a lot of dark, negative, demonic, air quotes, demonic type stuff out there, sure, it may be. But I think that you have to protect yourself from any energy that's out there.
Have you ever been tempted to bring items back from a location that you went to?
No, I have. No, wait a minute. Have I? I did as, now this may sound weird, but I did as a kid, you know, when you, like you go to the beach and you bring back seashells. I've done that. At haunted locations, no. I am very, very superstitious. So I will never take a piece of something, you know, regardless, like it could be a rusty nail. I'm not taking it. Mm-hmm. I'm just not doing it. Some people do. I don't know why. Are they trying to tempt something? Are they trying to open up something? Or they just want a nice little souvenir at the end of the day? I don't know. But I won't. I just won't. Out of respect for the location. Now, I do know people who do that out of respect. And then they make it into like little trinkets or whatever. And they sell them or they keep them for themselves. but they do it with out of love and kindness and respect. Mm-hmm. But I just, as a general practice, I won't do it.
As far as philosophy and beliefs, you touched on a little bit of that. How do you handle, as an investigator, how do you handle skeptics? How do you handle those people who you may be talking to and they, oh, come on, get out of here. That ain't real. Mm-hmm. That's a bunch of baloney.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally open to it. You know, I'm open to skeptics. I think at one time we've all been skeptics. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't necessarily believe that you go into the paranormal already a believer. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that everybody starts out as like a skeptic, and then they kind of start having experiences that opens themselves up. So I love skeptics, and I love talking to skeptics because I'm a skeptical believer. You know, I don't believe everything is paranormal. I believe, you know, I'll try to debunk everything first before I make that jump to say that it's paranormal. But there are hardcore skeptics that sometimes, and this can be a little frustrating, that no matter what happens, they could have somebody reach over and touch them on the shoulder and be like, hey, psst, and they're still like, nope. That can be a little frustrating when they're not open to it at all. But I welcome any conversation with any skeptic.
Do you work with people one-on-one sometimes when it comes to readings? And if so, do you take into account perhaps their religious beliefs and how to approach them with the information that you're giving them, mm-hmm. or trying to lead them to see something that maybe they don't?
Yeah. It all depends on the person. Again, I kind of let my intuition be my guide. So if I'm doing tarot readings and if I'm doing like Reiki on somebody, I'll kind of let my intuition guide me. If I feel that someone who, if they're more open to receiving advice on what to do, I'm going to give it to them. But if they seemed a little more closed off, then I won't. So it kind of depends on the person and the situation. I have run across a few religious people. Believe it or not, there are a bunch of religious people in the paranormal, which I find very interesting. That's a whole under rabbit hole you can go down to. People who are staunchly religious who are into the paranormal, because a lot of times those two don't always blend so well, in my opinion, from what I've seen. But again, it depends on the person, the situation. So I always try to be culturally sensitive, religiously sensitive, spiritually sensitive to anyone that I'm dealing with.
You mentioned Reiki a few times. Is that the realigning of the chakras, or is that something different?
No, it's a part of it. So you can align your chakras as part of a Reiki practice.
Mm-hmm. Can you define what chakras are?
Sure. So a chakra is different energy centers. So the belief is that there are seven main energy centers in the body. And some you may have heard of, like the sacral chakra. A lot of people have heard of that. The solar plexus, that's a common one that people have heard of, the root chakra, heart chakra, throat chakra, the third eye. The third eye is probably the most common one that everyone's heard of. You use your third eye to see things. And the belief is, and I forget the terminology, I forget the language that it comes from, chakra, I forget. But basically it's Sanskrit. Sanskrit for spinning wheel is what it is. And so the belief is that we have seven spinning wheels in our body that are energy centers. And if they're spinning and moving, that means energy is flowing and we're open and we're on par and everything's good. If they're spinning slowly or they're not spinning, that means you have some blockages or some energy blockage in your body that you need to get out, or some untapped energy or some emotions that you're not processing properly, going through some trauma or some drama in your life that needs to be healed. And so that's where realigning your chakras kind of comes into play.
Okay. Have you participated in seances?
I have one or two seances, and you know, I don't know what my hang up is about them, but for some reason I don't really care for them. I know that sounds weird because I'm a ghost hunter. So you would think that
You're inviting them to join you.
Yeah. But for some reason I get, maybe I don't know if I just wasn't involved with the right practitioner or the right person who hosted it. I'm not sure, but yeah, I have been involved in a couple seances, and I'm just kind of ambivalent to them.
I grew up in a household where parapsychology was all over the place.
Oh, cool.
And we've had Buddhists, we've had priests, we've had shamans, various other practitioners of other faiths come in. And at least like once a month, my mom and some of her friends would get together and they would meditate, and occasionally perform seances
as
best they could. I knew at least three or four mediums growing up in the area of Wayne, Devon, and Radnor. And it's an interesting experience meeting these people because they're just fascinating people.
Yeah, that's great.
Have you ever been able to help a spirit crossover? Or do you know anybody who has?
I do. And there is some controversy in the field when it comes to crossing spirits over. Ghost hunters don't necessarily like it because if we're crossing every spirit we encounter, then there'd be nothing left to investigate. They'd all, you know, be crossed over and they wouldn't be earthbound with us to communicate. I have come across people who, as a general practice, will try to cross them over because the belief, and these are usually people who are more spiritually attuned, in my personal opinion, who are the mediums, who are healers, who want to heal the spirit too. And so they attempt to cross them over so that they're not earthbound anymore. Because the belief is that we're not meant to be in this meat suit either. You know what I mean? You and I are meant to be free floating balls of energy. And we're here in this meat suit for a reason. And so the spirits that are here are earthbound. People say stuck. I don't like to use the word stuck. They're here for a reason, whether they realize it or not. And so a lot of healers, Reiki practitioners, psychics, mediums will want to attempt to heal the spirit to help them cross over. And I do believe they do it out of good intentions, out of a pure heart, because they're trying to help. But me, I don't, because I feel like it's a choice. It's a choice. They have the ability to cross over themselves if they want to, that they choose not to for whatever reason. That being said, I'm not against anyone going into a location because I feel like it's all about whether they want to or not. You can attempt to cross something over and they won't. Then no harm, no foul, you know? So, or maybe they will cross over and then that's great too. So I do know people who, as a general practice, will try to cross spirits over everywhere they go. I don't.
You had mentioned about us essentially being balls of energy, which I absolutely agree with. In your spiritual journey, have you looked into or tried astral traveling?
I have. It's funny you say that. A couple months ago, I started trying to dabble into that, listening to like YouTube videos at night with the headphones and stuff. I feel like I have, but because I don't know what it's supposed to feel like, I don't know if I did it successfully. That is something that I'm trying to tap into next, because honestly, I'm a little, I shouldn't say bored, but I've gotten complacent with the whole ghost thing. And so I'm trying to up my game a little bit, and I'm delving into cryptids and UFOs and alternate universes and stacked time theory. And I'm starting to get into all of that. And astro travel is something that I'm very, very interested in learning and doing.
I know the sensation of it. I just don't know. I can't grasp the visualization of it.
Okay.
I feel myself coming back in.
Okay.
But I never knew I left, you know?
Gotcha.
You can only feel yourself essentially falling back into your body.
Right.
That's always been how it's been described to me.
Okay. Right.
But I've not been able to learn how to control when it happens.
Oh.
It just happens.
Okay.
But at the same time, I'm aware of what's going on visually in front of me, but that little ball of energy, I have no idea what it's doing.
Okay. Now, are you awake at the time? Are you
a lot of times, yeah.
You're awake. Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Maybe that's not the right definition of it, but that's how I was always, it was always presented to me. So,
okay, that's cool.
Not being able to harness it or to do anything with it, sort of, I don't know. I think it defeats the purpose.
I know.
I mean, you hear about people who leave their body if they're on an operating table and they're looking down.
Yes.
Never had that.
No. No, I've mine usually comes in that weird theta state right when I'm about ready to fall asleep. I feel like I go somewhere and then I kind of come back and I see, you know what I mean? So that's why I asked if you were awake or asleep at the time.
There are times where it'll be happening when I'm starting to zone out.
Yeah.
I'm not paying attention. It's sort of maybe the eyes roll into the back of my head. I don't know. But yeah, I just sort of lose sense of stuff.
Yeah.
And then feel myself come back.
Okay. I'd like to do more research on that because I think that's a pretty broad definition, because you hear about people who you know, they're just sitting there, like you're sitting in traffic and you're at a red light and you zone out, mm-hmm. as you say. Where do you go?
Yeah.
Is that astral travel? What is that? And then all of a sudden there's a car honking behind you. And you're like, oh crap.
Yeah.
And then you go, and then you're like, crap, you went somewhere for that minute while you were waiting for that green light. Mm-hmm. Where do we go?
Yeah.
Is that astral travel? What is that? Or is that just our mind blanking out for a second, allowing more information to come in? Is that our brain shutting down for a minute to expunge unneeded information?
I think that's going to be a different topic for a different podcast.
There you go. There you go.
I'm going to call this one a lightning round.
Okay.
Are we alone?
No.
If you could ask a ghost, as any ghost, a single question and get a verifiable answer, what would you ask?
What does it look like where you are?
What are the common tropes about ghost hunting in movies that you find completely inaccurate?
Oh, tropes that are inaccurate. Everything is a demon. That's probably the biggest one.
Have you ever had a piece of equipment malfunction in a way that seemed paranormal?
Yes.
What was it? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, it was a simple device. It was like a REM pod. It could have been just the batteries dying. You know how REM pods, you know, work.
EMFs are electromagnetic field sensors.
Right.
REM pods are the same, I'm guessing?
Same thing. Yeah, same thing. It's just it has an antenna and has a wider, you know, scope around it.
Okay.
And it was just beeping like crazy. It wouldn't stop. And the temperature gauge was going off and we were like, this shouldn't be happening. And it was just kind of hard to debunk and we weren't quite sure what was going on with it.
What's the funniest or most unexpected thing that ever happened during an investigation?
The funniest or most unexpected? I forget where I was, but we had, there was at the Yellow House in Douglasville. If you're familiar with the Yellow House in Douglasville, the restaurant.
Yeah.
We investigated there one night and we were not expecting, we saw a ghost cat. We were not expecting to see a ghost cat.
Wow.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
What's something that a lot of people get wrong about paranormal investigations? What's the biggest misconception?
That it's a lot more exciting than it really is. And by that, I mean, you watch the TV shows and they're there for a week filming and you're seeing the best 22 minutes. It's a lot more boring than people think.
When you are going through and your colleagues are going through a location and you are asking your questions, do you get responses that may give you a clue as to how that entity passed?
I would really have to think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are. I just can't think of any off the top of my head. And that's the answer, probably because a lot of times when I've gone in and there are spirits present, I already know how they've passed.
You've worked with Adrian on the Old Soul Stroll. What is the most surprising thing you've encountered on that tour?
The most surprising thing is that two things. Number one, Boyertown is a lot more exciting town than I realize.
I'm learning.
And everyone needs to take, and I know you've probably taken her tours.
Not yet, actually.
You need to.
But I will.
Your family and your kids will love it. The most surprising thing is that Boyertown is a lot more happening town than most people realize. It has a lot more history. And the second most surprising thing is that I learned something new. Even though I've taken her tours, I've lost count. 8-10 times I've taken her tours and they've all been different. I've learned something new every single time.
If you had somebody you could go on an investigation with,
mm-hmm.
who would it be?
Oh my gosh. This may sound weird. This may sound very bizarre. It's not going to be the answer that you think. And I'm not going to say someone from TV. I'm not going to say one of my friends. I am a huge Edgar Allan Poe fan.
I saw the Poe Geek.
Yeah. If he were alive today, there's always that funny story. If you could have dinner with any dead person, who would mm-hmm. it be? He's my answer for everything. I would have dinner with him. I would love to go on a ghost hunt with Edgar Allan Poe.
Neat.
Yeah. I think that would be exciting because he was very spiritual and he was very open to all of that stuff.
What was the booze cruise?
Oh, yeah. So I'm hosting this event called Booze on the Battleship.
Yeah.
It's in the down in Wilmington, North Carolina on the USS North Carolina battleship. And I hosted the first one back in the end of April and I'm doing it again next year. So it's a big paranormal party on a battleship.
Is there something about that particular battleship or just to have do it on a battleship?
Yeah, to do it on a battleship, but also it's one of the most decorated World War II battleships. that's still in existence. Mm-hmm. And it has, I don't know how many stars it has, but it has all kinds of like military stars attached to it, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. And so apparently, because it's so highly decorated, there was a lot of deaths. It was torpedoed. And so there's a lot of spirits on board. So it's very haunted too. So.
And that can be found on Tamerlane Media?
So that is an event that I'm holding. So if people want to buy tickets for that, they can go on to TamerlaneMedia.com. And it also has its own Facebook page, Booze on the Battleship.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes.
A little bit of housekeeping.
Sure.
Folks can find you at?
Folks can find me at TamerlaneMedia.com. They can find me on Facebook. They can look me up at Katie McVeigh. And I also have a Tamerlane Media page on Facebook. And I'm on Instagram and TikTok as Poe Girl Paranormal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Katie, I think that actually brings us to the end.
We talked about a lot.
We did. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. We hope you enjoyed this this episode. And stay tuned for more.
Bye.